the sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just
day.
A sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. We'll be taking your calls and questions in just a moment, but the top of the hour feature this morning, we want to talk about roses. Last week on the Greenhouse Show, about a quarter of the questions we got had to do with roses. So we want to bring on the president of the Utah Rose Society. Elise Hutchings is with us. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
Exciting to have you. So the first question that I had, though, is are there some new varieties of roses that people should be excited about this year?
Yes, there are. The rose breeders are continually introducing new varieties every year. But I don't think we're going to be able to answer all of your questions in this time. So I'm going to be giving you some other resources and websites to check out that will go into greater length. The first one I'm going to let you know about is the Utah Rose Society website, and it's utahrose.org, R-O-S-E.org. If you click on the blog, there are some videos. There's one on the Utah a variety of new and notable roses for 2024. There's also a video of new roses from Star Roses, which includes some really interesting information on the lengthy process of hybridizing roses. So that will give you a lot of information about the new varieties that you'll be interested in.
Okay, perfect. But I got to ask you, what is your favorite? What's the one that you're going to plant this year?
Oh, you know, that's so tough because when new ones come out, I just think, oh, I've got to have all of them. So
one of each,
but I don't have enough room, so I will just have to be very particular.
And for me, it's often situational because do you need a ground cover rose? Do you need a bush rose? Do you need a hybrid tea? Do you need a David Austin? And so it's almost like I have to list two or three from every category, and then we're here for, you know, 30 minutes trying to rattle them all off.
So what are your best tips for growing healthy roses?
Roses need 6 to 8 hours of sunlight every day, good soil, fertilizer throughout the growing season, and water. But they don't like wet feet. All roses are naturally drought tolerant. Roses actually need 50% of the water that you would give turf grass. And actually, roses are easier to grow than a lot of people think.
So what mistakes are people making that they assume that roses are hard to plant?
Well, you know, there are a lot of videos that explain to you about how to plant a rose. You just, they're not hard. It depends on whether you're getting roses that are already established or...
the bare root?
Bare root roses, yes, uh-huh. And so I think the mistake that people might make is that they think that they don't give them enough room for the roots to grow, and they saturate them with water. You have to do that to get in the beginning when you plant them. But you don't have to water them to death after they're established. And it takes a while for the roses to become established. So you have to be patient and, just check and make sure that they don't have diseases. I don't know that people make mistakes when they plant roses unless they don't dig the hole big enough, for example.
Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, there are so many beautiful flowers out there. Why roses? Why are you passionate about roses?
Well, the rose is the national flower. Roses are associated with love. Roses are beautiful and fragrant. And as I said, they're easier to grow than most people think. There are thousands of varieties. So who doesn't love roses?
Right.
Well, and there's so many out there that you can be sentimental about. I mean, oh, there's a sentimental rose, but I mean, one of my favorites, and it's all because of sentiment. My grandpa was a Rosarian and loved Chrysler cars. He sold them for a while. And so one that I've tried to have, I need to get one again, that I always put in my yard is Chrysler Imperial, just because of, it reminds me of my grandpa.
Oh, and it is a beautiful, dark red rose.
Yeah.
That's very fragrant. Yeah, that's an all-time favorite, that's for sure.
Well, it used to be, a real sign of wealth. If you were wealthy and you had a mansion, you always had a rose bed, not just, just a row of roses, but actually had a rose bed off your dining room.
Oh, well, that doesn't surprise me because that's been going on for hundreds of years. And we have some people in the Rose Society who have, we had one who had 400 roses, another one who had 900 roses.
Oh, my.
So sometimes you just get really hooked, and then you just dig up more grass.
So tell us a little bit about the Rose Society before we have to let you go. What do you do? How do people get involved?
Okay. The Rose Society is an organization that's affiliated with the American Rose Society. The intent is to provide education to the community regarding rose growing and culture. We have meetings every month at the Garden Center in Sugar House Park. And then during the summer, we have garden tours to our members' gardens. We have consulting rosarians that will answer your questions and even come to your home and give you advice. We have a very strong Facebook group that also provides information, and we have a rose exhibit every year in June. This year, the Rose Show is going to be June 8th at the Garden Center in Sugar House Park. Do you want me to give you the address, or do you have that?
No, they can probably find the Sugar House Park address. I do want to know, before we let you go, though, where is your favorite place to buy roses?
Okay, we have a lot of nursery partners, and they are listed on our website. So you can order them online, or you can order them. We like to support our local nurseries.
Absolutely. So, give us your website again.
Okay, it's utahrose.org.
All right, Elise, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Okay. I'm very happy that you let me come.
Great. Have a great day.
Okay, thanks. You too.
And that is Elise Hutchings. She's the president of Utah Rose Society. We're going to take a break. Come back with your calls and questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. James has been waiting very patiently in Centerville. Good morning, James. What is your question this morning?
Several of them. Take what you can.
Go ahead.
Let me just say on the onset, this is a great program, and you guys do a great job. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much, James.
I'm transplanting some rhubarb and peonies that the bed has been overtaken by some grasses, some wild grasses. So today I'd like to dig them up and try to get rid of the grasses in the soil. And that might take a couple of days, So I'm wondering the best way to store those peonies and that rhubarb until I can replant them.
I would put them in some nursery pots with potting soil. And if you were going to plant them within the week to 10 days so they don't break dormancy and start to root out, that would be fine. And what you could do is another option would be, depending on their size, is actually to put them in potting soil that has some moisture in it, almost like a wrung out sponge, and refrigerate them for several days until you can get things cleaned up and get them replanted. But otherwise, I would just pull them out of the ground like you were going to move them or split them, and get some nursery pots or some buckets. And you want drainage holes in the bottom. And sometimes nurseries will give you or sell you used pots relatively inexpensively. And I would look at taking those and just putting them maybe on the north side of your house where they're cool and shaded, because you don't want them to break dormancy, and then replant them when you're done. Now, if they start to break dormancy and form roots, you may need to let them root out into those pots and get established before you replant them.
And I could still do that this spring sometime?
Sooner the better, because they are going to start breaking dormancy very soon.
All right, yeah.
If they're already popping up, then I wouldn't do it, because you may kill them.
Yeah, I haven't seen them sprout yet. They've been prolific. They've been very good plants.
I would, with the warmer weather, I would give it probably a week before those, especially the peonies, start to pop up out of the ground. And if they do, you're had, and you'll have to leave them there.
Okay. About treating the soil, if the soil is heated, like with a propane torch, or I don't want to use necessarily chemicals. Will it kill the organisms, the seedlings?
That's an interesting question. And because you would assume so, but if you can imagine how dense soil is and how much it would take to go 6 inches deep and heat it to 140 to 160 degrees for several hours to kill all the weed seeds in the soil. Because that's what you would have to do. And so there are instances, like I believe the Amish, sometimes if they have outbreaks in their fields, will start huge fires with hardwood and get the coal and then bury it in the soil and leave it there, because these hardwood coals will burn for hours and heat the soil that way. But it's a very impractical thing to do. And so a Passover with a torch wouldn't heat more than the top 16th to 8th inch of soil, and you would have to be able to sustain that heat until the soil was up between 140 and 160 degrees for several hours.
All right. That's a good answer. And it also, your advice about putting it on the north side, I was thinking I'd move them inside the garage, but I want to keep those plants as cool as possible.
Yeah, I think the north side will stay cooler. You could even get some bark mulch or soil and pile it around the pots and up to the lip of the pot to keep the root and the soil even cooler.
All right, that's a good idea.
All right, James.
You got time for another question?
No, I'm afraid we have four people waiting on the line, but thank you so much for listening and calling this morning. Next listener wants to know, Ton, how and when should they prune Carol Mackey Daphne?
Oh, don't.
Don't touch it, right?
They take over sometimes. You do as minimal a pruning as you can, and if it's growing into a sidewalk, follow the branch back to a point where you have some side branches and just clip the entire branch out and leave it alone.
All right. Debbie is on the line in Sandy. Good morning, Debbie. What was your question?
My question is, we have removed a few trees years ago, and we filled the holes with dirt and then put sod or grass over them. But now, after a few years, the grass has kind of sunk because I guess the hole wasn't filled high enough. So my question is, can we just put more dirt over those holes and then grass, or do we have to actually take out the grass to put more dirt in?
I would take out the grass first. I mean, you would need a good 6 inches of soil so that it doesn't interfere with root growth into that ground. And so, I mean, one thing you could do is just dig the grass out, leave it intact, put some more dirt in there, and just put the grass on top of it. But unless you have 6 inches, I would remove the old turf either way. And then you can get a spade or shovel and undercut it just like it's sod. you know, if you're doing it personally, I wouldn't do it as thin as sod. I would leave another inch on there to leave some more roots because it will reestablish more quickly. But just dig those areas out and, you know, go in with a spade and undercut the sod, pull it back, put soil in to get it level. And don't mash it cement hard, but it's okay to just make sure that it's settled down and then just lay the sod back over the top. And because it's so cool, throughout the next 6 or 8 weeks, that sod will reestablish.
Oh, okay. All right. Good to know. Thank you.
All right, Debbie, thanks for your call this morning. Ton, next listener, wants to know, is wood ash useful in the garden?
Not really, especially in Utah. Very small amounts don't hurt anything. Sometimes it's used to melt the snow off because of the dark color. Will absorb the sun's heat, but I wouldn't do more than about a 16th of an inch once a year over the entire garden. It does introduce potassium back into the soil, but it's also really salty. And so that's why I'm very cautious.
All right. Matt is on the line in Eagle Mountain. Good morning, Matt. What was your question?
Yes, I have a flowering pear tree that collapsed, is starting to collapse. I'm looking at transplanting honey locust that started from seed in my yard into that area. Is there going to be any issues with putting that honey locust where that flowering pear tree is?
Potentially, yes, because seed-grown honey locust oftentimes develop terrible thorns. The ones we grow have a recessive genetic trait of being thornless, but when they're pollinated, the characteristic of growing thorns comes back. And, the new honey locust will, after 10 to 15 years, produce seeds every year in those big bean pods, and so it will develop into a very messy tree.
Not worth keeping honey locusts around.
Well, if you wanted one, unfortunately, I know they're not cheap, but if you wanted a honey locust, I would hit a garden center and just get one that was thornless and seedless and plant it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Matt, thanks for your call this morning. We're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. And when we come back, Stephen, you'll be up next. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us, 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. Taking your calls at 801-575-8255, where you can text your questions to 57500. Steve is on the line in Grantsville. And good morning, Steve. What was your question this morning?
Hey, good morning, guys. I was just calling. I put down some new sod the beginning of last October. And I'm just wondering what I can do to kind of get the best out of it. I was planning on putting down a first stage fertilizer, and I'm wondering if I should aerate or not.
No. You want to get that sod established for at least a year before you start aerating. So I think you'll damage it more with an aerator at this point. And so just the new fertilizer to do that, and then just mow it at 2.5 or 3 inches so that it has more grass blade there to form deeper roots.
Okay. Perfect. Sounds great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks so much for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says, is there anything that they need to do for the reddish needles on the top of their mugo pines?
They could be there for several reasons, and without more information, I can't really say. It could be salt damage. It could be drought damage. It could be spider mites. It could be scale.
So maybe they should be doing something.
They need to investigate. Maybe take some samples into their local extension office and have them checked out, or at least take pictures and email them to their local extension office.
Okay. Next listener says, when should they remove the wrap from their saplings and fertilize them?
They can remove the wrap anytime. The fertilizer, they can get that down in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. Next listener wants to know when they should apply chelated iron around their peach trees.
I would do that in the next, it's probably fine now. So in the next 2 to 3 weeks, get it down.
Okay. So, Next listener has been out of town for the last couple of months. They want to know what they've missed to do in the yard and garden. They want to know what needs to be done ASAP.
Clean up any leaves that are on the grass so they don't smother. Prune the fruit trees if they have fruit trees. Those are the main two things. Roses.
They need to be done right away.
Yes.
Okay. Next listener wants to know, how do you increase the pH level of the soil for raspberries?
You want to drop it.
Not increase it.
But you can't really do either in our soil very easily. And so the best thing to do is to incorporate lots of compost before they're planted, or top dress with an inch or so a couple times a year over around the crowns. And then I just would make sure if they've had problems with iron chlorosis that they put down the chelated iron that we've had several questions about, and soil drench with chelated iron so that the raspberries hopefully have enough in the soil that they have access to.
The next listener wants to know if you've tried the sweetie drop peppers. Have you ever tried those?
No.
Do you know what they are?
I looked them up during a break, and they look like they're one native to South America. But I'm liking more and more vegetables, so I don't want to be a downer here, but I'm just not a huge pepper fan. So I
come on, Tom. I love
just,
peppers.
I don't know why. I've started eating a lot more vegetables, and I joke about, you know, the Brussels sprouts sometimes and things, but peppers are just one that I just have never been able to get with. A few here and there are fine, but just to eat a pepper, or even in like Mexican cooking.
What about like chili and chili?
Well, it's a little different, but if you have stuffed peppers or everything comes out sizzling and you put it in a tortilla and eat it.
Fajitas.
The peppers, I just can't do it. I don't know.
With this diet I've been doing, like, peppers are one of my go-tos.
Yeah, and I would be in trouble. And I don't mean to disparage anybody that likes peppers. I can have, like, in salsa and a few things, or just a few. But when I get a lot of pepper, I don't know.
Okay, but would there be any special growing suggestions for those peppers?
If they could find seeds, I think that they would just be grown like any pepper.
Okay. Next listener would like to know, do Golden Delicious apples grow well here in Utah?
They are very well suited to the Wasatch Front. They've been declining in popularity for other apples because they don't store longer than 5 or 6 weeks. But they're my favorite apple, and they have been traditionally grown here for a long time, and they're actually one of the easier apples to take care of. They still need to be sprayed and managed for coddling moth, but they're a great apple for Utah.
You have a specific kind you would suggest?
Golden Delicious. There's a few different strains of Golden Delicious. Find like a spur type Golden Delicious that doesn't grow as aggressively. But it's more going to depend on how big of one they need. But the difficulty is even though there's different rootstocks that will control the size, it's really hard to find them and be able to purchase them unless you want to order like 100 of them.
Oh, no.
But, I mean, for me personally, just because of today's smaller yards, if you could find one that was on a dwarfing rootstock, I would just buy a $10 T-post, put it in next to the trunk, and just keep it supported with the T-post. But otherwise, a semi-dwarf Golden Delicious is fine.
Okay. Next listener lives in Roy. They have clay soil. The last 5 years, their autumn blaze maples have turned yellow early summer with an unhealthy look to the leaves. They want to know what they can do to maybe counter that.
The chelated iron we keep talking about, they would need to make an application within the next couple of weeks. The autumn blaze maple just isn't a great tree for Utah. And because they're turning yellow doesn't mean their soil is bad. It's just that we planted them here, and so they need to be deep watered less often. So weekly during the summer, if they're established, maybe even every 10 days, but you would water to a depth of 18 inches and then don't water again, and you would water under the canopy. And so if they're in the lawn sprinklers, maybe deep watered every 2 or 3 weeks, but they're just sometimes a tough tree for Utah. And if you're looking for maple trees that have orange to red fall color, they're still not perfect, but the Pacific sunset or the Norwegian sunset maples are more adapted to our soils. They're susceptible to sun scald, so I would wrap them in the winter, but those would be what I would recommend.
Okay. Next listener wants to know if something's up. They've tried to buy fertilizer spurge killer at the big box stores, and they didn't have any in stock. You haven't heard about any shortages or anything. Maybe it's just a little early?
No, and if they're going after spurge, I think isoxaben, which has been sold as Gallery or Galleria, there's several products, but if they were to hit up Steve Regan or IFA or Cal Ranch maybe, but local farm stores and garden centers will have a product with isoxaben in it, and if they have spurge problems, that's actually going to be a better product.
I think that the biggest question today is going to be on aeration and dethatching. So I think for those listeners who are just tuning in, we probably need to rephrase what your thoughts are on both of those things and when they should do the aeration.
There's a Bible verse that's more referring to marriage that says, for those who cannot contain, it is better to marry than to burn.
What?
But in this situation, unless a lawn company that you've contracted with is doing the aeration, just take your aerator to your local religious leader and tell them that I can't control myself. Can I come get it in a month? That's what I'd recommend. And I think the scripture, it's not that you're going to burn for aerating early. It's fine. But if you can wait for 2 or 3 weeks, I really would.
Wait 2 or 3 weeks to aerate.
Yeah.
Do not dethatch.
And do not dethatch. And if you just can't control yourself, find a local religious leader and drop off your aerator until a later date.
I've been asked by some of our listeners not to try to stop you from making these crazy comments. So I'm going to just let you go.
During break, I'm going to get stood in the corner. I go sit on my chair and think about what I've done wrong.
Okay. We are going to take a break. Speaking of break, number to call with your questions. The phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. Text us 57500. Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you, taking your calls 801-575-8255. You can also text at 57500. Next listener wants to know, is it too late to prune roses in South Jordan?
No, it's actually a perfect time to do it.
I noticed I just have a couple of branches that need to be taken care of, but okay. Next person wants to know if you could tell them the best way and time to plant bare root strawberry plants. They have bought some online.
If they haven't arrived yet, that's a good thing. I would give it another couple of weeks at least.
Sounds like they have arrived, though.
So if they have arrived and they haven't started growing, I would just make sure that the roots do not dry out. And I actually would put them in my refrigerator for a couple of weeks before planting them. But when you're ready to plant, just follow the instructions. USU has some great raspberry fact sheets. But follow the instructions on them. And
these are strawberries, though.
Yeah, excuse me. Great strawberry fact sheets.
Thank you.
Misspoke there. And the roots are probably going to be 5 or 6 inches long. They can clip the bottom inch or two of the roots and then put them in the soil and plant them.
Okay. Sandy is on the line in Stansbury Park. Good morning, Sandy. What was your question?
Yes, I was wondering if it's too early to divide perennials.
No, do it. It's a great time.
Okay, good. All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call this morning. Next person wants to know if they can cut back their ornamental grasses like the Carl Forrester and the maiden grass now.
Yeah, it's on. It's spring. It's time to do it. You can pull your pruners out. You can get your hedge trimmers out. You know, those grasses can be tough to cut back. And I've used a sharp machete, not that it's not just for the fact that it's a machete, but if you can gather the grass and just kind of, if you get it sharp enough, you can just cut and it'll cut right through the grass.
Mm-hmm.
A weed whacker, if it's not too thick, there's several things you can do, but those grasses can be quite difficult to cut back sometimes.
I know, I need to do mine. I wish I had done them in the fall, but since I didn't, I like to I like to see them still there into the winter.
No, that's
but
great.
There's such a mess now.
One thing I used to do is just gather the top, and I might even tie it off and then use an electric hedge trimmer to just go in and cut it down that way.
I love that idea. Okay. Next person wants to know, what type of sealant should they put on a larger branch that they've cut off their peach tree that was damaged because of broken limbs?
None. Just let the tree do its thing. As long as
it will seal up by itself.
As long as it's pruned correctly, it will heal itself much better than we ever can.
This could be an autocorrect issue. This person wants to know, what are ramps? Can they grow in Utah gardens? Do you know?
Don't know.
I think that's an autocorrect issue. You might want to rephrase your question and ask us again. This person says, is it too early to plant skip cherry laurel?
Oh, Skipka. It's another autocorrect. S-C-H-I-P-K-A. Skipka insis cherry laurel. If you can find them, you can probably plant them. But yeah, Skipka laurel. It's similar to...
Skip cherry sounds good.
Yeah, they're just called skips in the industry. And so someone is working for a garden center, or the garden center told them that's the name, but Skipka or Skipka insis.
Hmm.
But they're just a tall English laurel.
Is it shade tolerant?
Yeah, that's where they need to be planted.
Okay. Next person would like to know if you could recommend any columnar apple or other fruit trees.
Well, there's not a lot of columnar fruit trees. Apples do. You can order them online. Sometimes Home Depot or Lowe's will have them, but they will get 2 or 3 feet wide and 10 to 12 feet tall. Mm-hmm. The apples are good. They're not going to be quite as good as a Fuji or a Gala or a Honeycrisp, but they're still good apples. And if you have limited space, they are a pretty good option. But otherwise, you can get dwarf peaches, but they're not columnar. And then you can get sometimes other dwarf apples that are on dwarfing rootstocks, but there are not a whole lot of options out there with columnar fruit trees besides the... They used to be sold as colonnade apples, but they're just sold as columnar apples.
Okay. Next person would like to know what kind of vitamins they should use for their red bud.
You know, it's actually an appropriate term, because when we put fertilizer on plants, it is not food. It's not plant food. It's nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
And so vitamins are nutrients. And so I think when people ask about that, that's actually a lot more appropriate than what plant food should I use, because food implies carbohydrates or protein. And it's
nutrients.
You didn't
like the fact that I giggled when I read that, did you?
Well, and it's just not a really common term. But I think it is...
Appropriate,
but it's kind of cute, too. So, but if your redbud is healthy, you don't need to do anything, you know. And if you did do anything, no more than just say, without knowing the size, it's hard, but no more than a half a cup of fertilizer, because redbuds have... buds have really brittle wood, and you don't want to cause a lot of uncontrolled growth, because it is going to be more likely to break.
All right. I'm going to try and squeeze James in here. He's from Lehigh. James, what was your question this morning?
Yeah, I'm looking at raised garden beds on the south side, you know, the sunny side of my house.
Uh-huh.
I noticed my daughter down in Vineyard built some out of bricks or something. And she had great tomatoes growing last year on her south side. There's galvanized, there's wooden. I've been looking. What would you recommend? And what's the height, say, for tomatoes? And you put underneath there, they're just open round circles, right?
Yeah, the tomatoes weren't excellent just because they were in raised beds. Your daughter was doing other things correctly to get them.
Uh-huh.
And so if you're going to build a raised bed, you want it at least 6 inches, but preferably a foot of uh-huh. growing space. And then the material is going to be what you can afford, because like the galvanized metal is expensive, but it will last forever. Where
right.
wood, let's say you use construction lumber, that's going to last you for 5 to 10 years before they need to be replaced. If you clean the soil out, and on the inside especially, reapply linseed oil every year, put the soil back, that they'll last longer, but that's some work. And so it more boils down to what you can afford, how permanent they're going to be, and the look you want.
Yeah, I don't care for looks. It's all vinyl fenced in and all. But I'm wondering, you said it on the regular turf, you know, I mean, ground that you have there. So do you dig that up and stir that up and mix it up and then put that thing over it?
You don't have to, but you don't want the grass eventually growing up through if they're not deep enough. And so I would recommend digging it out unless you have some sort of permanent barrier down there to prevent it from coming up.
All right, James, we're going to have to break. We need to take a break for the top of the hour news.
All right. Thank you. Bye.